If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Hi everybody, welcome to Needle Exchange, Conversations on the Art of Thread. We've got a bit of an unusual episode this week in that I was at the Stitch Festival in London in mid-March 2025, and as part of my being there, I had a half-hour interview with Sarah Corbett, founder of the Craftivist Collective. Sarah and I go back many years, and so this was a nice, easy chat in front of an audience, just talking about craftivism, the form of gentle protest, what it means, the kind of change that you can make in the world. And I just thought I'd share that with you, really. So here it is, a nice, easy recording where you can listen to Sarah and I in action. I mean, to be honest, you can listen to Sarah in action and I every now and again lob an easy question in her direction. But yeah, here it is, nice little chat. I'll be back next week with another conversation from another part of the Needle universe. But until then, enjoy the show.
That was good.
Little overview. Because my stuff is so small, I thought if I just hold it up, you might not
see that? Yeah. Right, so hi everybody, I'm Jamie, I'm Mr. Exitch. This is Sarah, founder of the Craftivist Collective. We go way back.
We do.
We've had adventures, haven't we?
We're old.
No, we're not. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we've been around a while. It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we, once upon a time, we did a Craftivist project called I'm a Piece.
Which is in the book.
Which is in the book. And we went to Indonesia.
Yeah, we'd save the children.
Yeah, and that was pretty mega. So we've been around, but this isn't really about it. This is about me asking questions so that Sarah can enlighten you all and grow upon the story which has been beholden via this power of video. So Sarah.
Yeah, mate.
Tell us more about craftivism. Tell us how it came to be that we are here now talking about craftivism.
Well, so you just heard my approach to craftivism, but I always say craftivism's a bit like the word punk. You know, when you think of punk music, you've got all these different bands and artists that sound very different from all over the world. And the word craftivism was coined in 2003 by an American knitter called Betsy Greer, who was living in London at the time and saw that lots of knitting groups would talk about politics and the upcycling and recycling while they were crafting. So she coined this term craftivism, and my approach I called gentle protest. But I didn't come from, I always feel intimidated in these places because I didn't go to art school. I learned to craft from YouTube. My background's in activism. So I grew up in Everton, in Liverpool, with my dad as the local vicar and my mum as the local politician and squatting in social housing. Went to South Africa when I was 8 to learn about the peace and reconciliation work with my family, which was Desmond Tutu and Mandela's work, which formed a lot of my learning about activism as well. He just got out. It was in 91, so it was a very volatile time. And I worked in campaigning for Christian Aid and Oxfam as a professional campaigner. But I'm an introvert, like a lot of crafters. Don't like conflict, like a lot of people. And I didn't like how loud and transactional or how hateful it could be. You know, we're all humans. So I wanted to treat people how I wanted to be treated, be respectful in my protest. And I noticed on a train to Glasgow, I was doing a bit of cross-stitch because I get too travel sick when I'm reading or writing my reports, and I was feeling quite burnt out as an activist. So I picked up a little cross-stitch kit as my first ever piece of craft outside of school. Which is how I got to know this one. Of a teddy, and immediately noticed separating the thread, I had really shaky hands, really shallow breath. I was really stressed out, which I wasn't aware of. This was 2008 when the word mindfulness people didn't really talk about, but I just knew I was so shaky, I was so burnt out. And no one in activist groups had been saying to each other then, they do now, you know, how are you feeling? Don't burn out. Make sure that you have time to rest after and before campaigns. So just separating the thread helped me slow down and calm down. And then I was doing this slow, repetitive stitching that was helping my breath be less shallow. And then it was a train to Glasgow for 5 hours, and this couple opposite me were asking me what I was doing. And I immediately thought, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought, oh, if only I was cross-stitching a quote by Gandhi, we could talk about inequality. But it was a teddy. But I thought, this is interesting that on trains, we don't often talk to people, but the craft was what intrigued them. It created a safe space that wasn't intimidating, where we could have a little chat and then get back to our reading and our crafting. And I just thought, the process of craft, the fact that you're doing it quietly, it's small and intriguing, maybe this could help with activism. So I Googled craft and activism. The word existed, but there wasn't any gentle protest, cross-stitch stuff with my strategic activism background of how do we engage politicians or with it. So Betsy was very kind and said, you can use the word, do whatever you want with it. Anyone can use the word craftivism. So I just started tinkering. And it was that gut feeling, really, of I think handicraft could really help fill a gap in activism that other forms of activism didn't, and then just exploring. Yeah.
I'm going to run a quick straw poll of the audience a minute. How many of you have made something meaningful for somebody? Stick your hands up. I know, that was a really easy, soft question, but I think we recognise that when you make something for somebody, yeah, while you're making it, you spend time thinking about that person, right?
Yeah.
And that core concept underpins your approach. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I'm wearing my Glaswegian granny's little crocheted scarf. She used to make herself loads of them to stay warm. She retired to Shetland. So I'm wearing hers today because she made it for herself, but I got it when she passed away. So it's that thing of, again, that intuition of these objects we make have, the hippie in me is like, they have power. I mean, in the book, I have a neuroscientist from MIT to talk about how this isn't hippie stuff. This is real neuroscience of how we engage with people. So it was also that thing of, my nan was a crafter. I knew the power of handicraft and having objects made by her and the memories that brought it in. So that also made me think, well, what if I make something for my local MP that's humble and small and encouraging, not demonising, to build a relationship with them where they remember me. I try and see them as a human being, even though we disagree and vote in different ways. And by giving them this handkerchief I made, it looks like this. This sample from the book. So you can see it's handwritten, it's just backstitch. It's a bespoke message for your local MP, or it might be for your head teacher in school that you're trying to challenging a loving way to try and do something that you think could be more helpful for people or planet. I knew as a crafter, and as you do, the power of the energy and the intention you put in your object that can really build bridges with people rather than what a lot of activism is, which is building walls at the moment and getting worse with polarization. So there was all of these little, so many craft puns, these little threads that I was like, oh, that makes sense. Oh, that makes sense. And the process, I have people who, all of our projects, you have 3 craft a thought questions. So while you're doing mostly hand embroidery or paper craft, it's not machine embroidery, you don't have to count things apart from a bit of cross stitch sometimes. You use that meditative process where instead of, this is the bit that you might all want to leave, instead of that don't lovely leave feeling of being in the flow, you know, when you're in the flow of craft and you look up and 5 hours have disappeared, I don't let you do that in my workshops, sorry. That is when your hands know what you're doing and your mind wanders off and you feel empowered and you feel calm, that's when I get people to look at craft of thought questions of not easy yes or no answers, but things like, okay, what are my values and how am I threading them through my life to be a role model for others, like Gandhi's Be the Change You Wish to See in the World? Or if I'm making a gift to challenge a person in power that I have some connection with, whether it's an MP or a board member, if I have shares of a company, what would it be like to be in their shoes? How can I empathize with people I disagree with and try and understand them as a human and not judge them and not agree or disagree, but understand them to see how you can be a better loving activist? So you're using the process for that critical thinking and mindfulness either on your own or in a group. And that's, yeah, one of the process is just as important as the final product, but it's not one or the other. Like, the final product, I think, needs to be a really robust catalyst for change because we don't want it going in a landfill. So there's lots to think about of the sustainability of the resources you use, the process, the product, how it engages with the public, all of that stuff.
I like it. When we did this I'm a Piece project, we had to do jigsaw pieces and you had to do messages on them that you would give to local influencers. And I remember, mine was a bit cheeky, but I did a kind of Spider-Man quote that was like, with great power comes great responsibility, that kind of thing. But like that handmade thing, the fact that you're offering tactile, soft objects, you know.
And that was for your MP, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I always joke about how I'm not doing the politics, but I could see his cold, cold heart thawing ever so slightly as I handed him this piece. And the thing was, this is me. I'm going up to him like, you're doing a great job. Keep up the great work. This is a gift from me to you with love. Here's a bit of food for thought. And he sort of wandered off. And I think he was a bit bemused by the whole thing because he was sort of holding this jigsaw piece that I'd cross-stitched on. And then this as well, the whole thing or whatever. It was quite a surreal experience. But yeah. It's beautiful. But I think that's the thing. What's great about your approach to craftivism, there's lots of ways to do it. Mm. But when you negotiate with people, there's this primitive instinct that we go through where a lot of the time, you know, you see riots or displays or whatever, people are like, argh. And this soft approach kind of undermines that and it gets past that and it allows a space for more sophisticated thought.
Do you want to know the neuroscience behind it?
Do we want to know the neuroscience?
Yeah, I love the nods.
Go on.
So hopefully Dr. Danby Kim isn't here to tell me I've got it wrong, but I can check in the book. It's basically about if you think of a lot of activism, it's bad surprises. You're throwing a milkshake at someone, you see a catwalk show and you have protesters come on and scream and shout. And that, it gets media. You can see the strategy of media. It's a shock awareness at the time. But actually, if you look at the neuroscience, it shocks people into overwhelm, go into fight, flight or freeze mode. People don't know what to do. So even if they agree with you, their body has switched off because they're in survival mode, because we're all animals and wanting to survive, and we don't understand the difference between a bear and an Instagram post at the moment. So that's bad surprises, and that means that whenever that power holder or even that member of the public sees you, your body, often subconsciously, not even consciously, immediately goes into protective mode because your body knows that that person made you feel fearful or unsafe. So you immediately freeze up again. If it's a politician, they get an email from you and they go, oh, they made me feel bad. I don't, shame, bad, unsafe, whatever it is. So it's really hard to then help them be more curious and open-minded and open-hearted to have a conversation with you. A good surprise is when, you know, your friend or a loved one comes and gives you a cupcake. They've made some and they've got one left and they go, here's one for you. And you go, oh, that's lovely. So it's not a birthday present. It's a complete surprise and it can be really little, but it gives you dopamine because you don't expect it. And also it means, so for our handkerchiefs and for your embroidered jigsaw piece, that person who received it no longer looks at Jamie as this scary person. Their body literally goes, they gave me dopamine. I want more dopamine. So again, sometimes it's subconscious. So they're much more likely to open your email, or their staff will open their email, because they want that dopamine. So it strategically makes a lot of sense to do good surprises rather than bad surprises. And I do worry we're in such a polarized world now where it's so easy not to talk to people you disagree with and be in our little silos, that more and more we need to be gentle and we need to find each other in the middle and have those safe conversations where you might not change someone's mind, but you actually might. I mean, when I made a handkerchief, I moved to a new constituency. I didn't know my MP. We disagreed on a lot of things. I support lots of campaign organisations, so I'd get lots of their postcards in their post or the emails to sign, and I'd ping them all out, being like, yep, I care about that and that and that. And I got an email from their office saying, please stop contacting us. This is a waste of your time and our time and charity's money. And I was fuming. I was like ready to have a little rant of, you're supposed to represent me and this is democracy. Instead, I did the hoovering, which is often my go-to when I'm angry, or I dance it out in the kitchen. I had a scream, I had a dance, I did the hoovering, and I thought, okay, they're a new MP, or maybe they're overwhelmed, their staff will therefore be new, they probably think I will never vote for them, and we seem to disagree on a lot of stuff. So what can I do to say I'm a constituent? I'm actually quite a useful constituent because I'm part of the local craft group, I know the local WI, part of different communities, so I could be useful for them, and maybe we would agree on some stuff. So I emailed saying, I've made you a gift, you're a new MP, I'm new to the area, I'd love to meet and just have a chat and see if there's any way we can support each other to support our constituency and further, and found out that they used to work for John Lewis. So I gave my hanky to them in person. They gave me the earliest appointment on a Saturday morning at like 9 a.m. and I'm not a morning person. I was like, very clever, in the local library. But I handed over this handkerchief in a very humble and a little bit embarrassing way, because it's not perfect, and was like, hi, I'm new to the area, you're the new MP. I thought you might like a gift to encourage you in your tough job. It's a handkerchief, it says, don't blow it, please. I know you've got a really difficult job, but an important job, and I want to encourage you to do the best you can to help our community flourish and the world flourish. Yours in hope, my name and my postcode, so they knew I was a constituent. And a bit like your experience, they went from being very much like this, and the staff, quite young, being like, what are they going to give to them? And then read it, and just that softness, and they looked at the back to see how messy it was. And then we talked about where we did agree on stuff, and we still don't agree on everything, but we support each other on campaigns we do agree with. We've done some media together, some local support. I've got them in touch with people who might not normally work with them for whatever reason. I could say, actually, on this issue, you're aligned. So it is very much, the craft is such a, I always say it's a catalyst for positive change. It's not you do one thing and you tick it off your list and leave. It creates relationships. It creates conversations. It creates thought in your own head while you're doing your craft of thoughts to think about, okay, could I do anything more differently? Am I demonizing people? Am I saying all this type of role are awful people? And can I actually challenge myself to not do that as well?
So if we're in a world that is, as you say, quite polarized, quite difficult, yeah. There are lots of big problems, aren't there? And you sometimes think that cross-stitching something might not make the slightest bit of difference. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, you've been involved in processes that have helped create changes in the law.
Yeah.
What are the wisdom or the solace that you can give to people to say it is worth the time? You know, it might not be the grand change you explain, but perhaps any change is worth going for. Like, speak to that.
Yeah, and I work a lot with people. I prioritise engaging people who've never done any activism before, people of all political persuasions or none, and people who are overwhelmed, people who are introverted, lots of highly sensitive people, people who are housebound, so can't go on big marches or have mobility issues, who often feel they can't join other forms of activism, or, like me, don't want to be part of fueling the us versus them hate drama triangle, victim, persecutor, hero model that is not helpful. And I always think it's common sense, and most people nod when I say, you know, start off small and work your way up. But if you think of a lot of the media and a lot of protests, it's often start massive, be the next Malala, set up your own charity or target the MP. And I'm like, no, let's target your local constituency or what. So some of our projects are about inner activism. Start with yourself. What can you do within your own capacity, your own economic, you know, limitations to help the planet? Is it renewable energy? Is it saying hello to your bus driver and giving eye contact to people? Is it doing your recycling, which we know people change their behaviours more through seeing other people do stuff than being told what to do? So is it to be that role model so that people can mirror you? And those ripple effects outwards. And then for issues that you care about, it's being geeky, really, which is what I love and write about in the book, of looking at what's the change you want to see, what's the dream, so not focusing on the problem. Again, with the neuroscience, if you just focus on the problem, you're stuck in fight, flight, or freeze mode and overwhelm. So you flip the problem into a solution. And our dream project is the first project where you literally sit with your little cloud and imagine the world you want to see. So not everything, but focus on one tangible issue. So in the book, we talk about people wanting joyful bees. You know what the problem is. The opposite of joyful bees is that we're not, you know, supporting bees, and there's a lot of harm going on. So you sit and go, what would joyful bees in this world look like? What would it sound like? What would it feel like? And that manifestation of that visualizing, your brain starts trying to figure out how you can be part of that solution as an individual, as a community, and then it starts coming up with ideas. So then you think of, okay, joyful bees, so what can I do a little box on my window ledge? I don't have a garden, so what can I do? But your brain starts percolating once you're doing that sewing. The same with if there's something going on in your local school. If you're not a parent, probably can't have much impact, but maybe you find a neighbour who is a parent. If something is happening in your workplace, figuring out a way of what's the problem, what's the solution, who are the decision makers, how can you reach those decision makers? If you can't reach them, can someone else? And figuring it out that way, rather than often what we do is just sign this and you'll change the world, which I think is unfair, really. So we have to be quite nuanced and understand the political system a bit, which is a bit boring, which is why I've done the book, to do the boring stuff, because I'm a geek on that stuff. But yeah, it's really using the craft to channel your reactive emotions into something proactive rather than burns you out or just screams at people.
Yeah, sound. And I think the other thing I would add to that is there's only so much in the world that you can change. And actually, yeah, Weirdly, if you spend time making a thing, if it is a thing, like all the time we've known each other, I've talked about dog poo just casually, but mainly because, you know, that's something that if you look on your little Facebook group is annoying people, and maybe you cross-stitch a little, like, pick me up, smiley dog poo, and you leave it hanging in a tree or something. But even if that's all you do, it's making a difference. And sometimes The lasting change you want is the change that you make within yourself rather than necessarily changing the climate.
And someone did do that as one of our little mini protest banners and hung it in the park, shared it on Instagram, and then other people around the world did it. So sometimes you don't know the impact you're having as well. I've had it with friends who, years after me talking about upcycling, I'm going to be judging these tomorrow, so I'm very excited about the upcycling category, and the catwalk tomorrow. Come to the catwalk tomorrow. But my friend, I'll talk about upcycling and ethical jeans that I've got that is constant free repairing, and in a way that's sort of indirect activism. So I'm celebrating really good business and social enterprises without saying, and therefore it's awful that you're buying from X, Y, and Z. And 3 years after I lived with her and we were doing that, she emailed me going, you know, it's only really been this year that I've looked into who made my clothes and fashion revolution and what I can do as a consumer and how I, engage with clothes. But that came from you. And I was like, okay, it might have took 3 years, but you sometimes don't know those seeds that you're planting. And I had an email from WWF, not the wrestling, which is probably where your mind goes. World Wildlife Federation. It's always a tongue twister. Email me, their head of campaigns emailed me out the blue saying, I don't know if you know this, but I thought you might like to know. They'd read my paperback book before this one and said, we used your manifesto, which is a good reminder, actually, when we are finished, I'm going to be here at the table. I've got free manifesto postcards for anyone that wants them and free stickers that Jamie's wearing. They said, I don't know if you know this, but we used your 10-point manifesto to create a campaign in Spain to protect migrating birds. Birds. Lots of people don't know what when I say birds. They think it's like grizzly birds.
Can I just give you your 1 minute birds. Warning, by the way?
Yeah. And they said, we used your 10-point manifesto, we created a campaign, and we changed the law. So thank you very much. And I thought, well, that's humbling because they didn't need my help. They just needed the manifesto. But I wouldn't do what I do if it didn't work. And that's the point of the handbook, is it's got 20 projects, collages of people who've used all the projects in different ways, quotes from them, including this one, different ways you can do events, you can do it on your own, is to say, look, if you do it strategically and lovingly, it can work. And it's not always easy, but I always say it's much more fulfilling than fun. It is, yeah, it's more long-lasting dopamine than...
We're nearly done. Sarah's going to read something. This is cool. Just go for it.
Oh, this is the last page of my book, and it's all hand-stitched. You can see it afterwards as well. And it's the epilogue. It says, Dear Craftivist Collective, let us always thread gentleness through our craftivism. Use the comfort of craft to help move from the discomfort through the discomfort needed for personal growth. Let's craft our protests to communicate love, not personal attacks. Forgiveness as fertile ground for progress rather than holding resentment. Disarm critics. Instead of being dismissive, let's be encouraging. Instead of being an aggressive enemy, be a critical friend. Let's make our protests persuasive, moving from demanding to understanding. Instead of force, offer invitations to create solutions together where possible. We are countercultural craftivists. When society wants a hero rather than collective progress, do not succumb to ego-driven activism, but act humbly in service to the cause. In solidarity, Sarah. Kiss, 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 XXX, stitch, stitch, stitch. And you can see the messy back afterwards.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much for coming. Can I take a little video of you waving? Because I'm really bad at this. Say hello. Oh, look at the waves. Thank you so much for coming. It means a lot. Thanks, Jamie.
It's a pleasure. Love you.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NEEDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.